Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekdays from 5:30.
Welcome to the podcast, Tuesday, the 20th of July. Marto and Margot coming up in the show. You guys talked about fighting the law and winning. We had a text come through once we're finished on air. Just want you to read this one.
I was parked in a no-stopping zone getting some lunch and got a parking fine.
Fair enough.
So I went and bought $10 worth of fuel and sent the receipt to the council saying I ran out of fuel and I got off the fine.
Oh, my
what
God.
A tip.
That's the template to get out of every parking fine. Thank you, whoever you are. Amen.
We'll hear more about fighting the law and winning a bit later on in the podcast, but let's kick things off, Marto, with a thought on sport.
Three!
Marto's thought on sport.
So funny old stories coming out of the NRL hub now that they've relocated. Of course, there's a hub at the Gold Coast, one at South Bank and one up the Sunshine Coast.
Dancers being snuck into hotel rooms,
Marto? I hope not for their sake. I think they've all learnt their lesson.
Good. No barbecues.
Well, the thing is now, this will stop it, I guess. Only last night, loved ones have finally been given approval to fly north and start 14 days quarantine.
Yeah.
So they're at a separate hotel. And then after the 14 days, they can move into their team's bubble.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that. I know there was a bit of uproar about the partners getting an exemption.
No, they had
but
to
I think
just
if they do the quarantine and isolate and do what everybody else has to do when they want to come and travel interstate,
500 family members of partners were sent for COVID testing yesterday. In anticipation, they'll be travelling tomorrow, it looks like, on Wednesday.
Okay.
All right, so that's okay. Approval was given, final approval granted last night. Funny old thing here, the Eels, Parramatta Eels, they're playing Canberra Raiders on Thursday night.
Okay.
They're also in the same hotel in the NRL hub and their team rooms, and that's where, you know, you sleep in your rooms upstairs, but then you have your team room where you have your meetings, video analysis, you eat your meals, etc., right next door to each other. That would be very interesting.
A friendly fire, maybe.
And we find this out because Clint Gutherson, who is Parramatta captain, the Eels captain, he was talking about it, and he was also talking about this. And I love Clint Gutherson. If he's not in the top 10 players in the game of rugby league, there's something wrong. He's brilliant. And he hasn't got a wife. He hasn't got any kiddies.
Bachelor, living that single life.
And he wants to bring his two dogs. He's got two Kelpies, Poppy and Otis. He wants to bring them into the hub. And I say, NRL, don't
you
be dogging.
You just saw Kelpie, didn't you?
He's, what?
He's you just saw Kelpie and went, I'm with him.
Look. There's a photo of Clint and his two dogs, but he had to get a girl in. She's not named, but the two dogs are. So she's holding one of the dogs.
She's
she doesn't get named. She's just like, hey.
These are the random from the Courier Mail.
She was walking past. Hey, what are you doing? Can you hang on to one of these dogs?
Okay.
The 26-year-old said he might have to spend the next 2 months without his two young dogs.
No.
What? Bring Gutho's dogs. I'd like the big breakfast to support this. Let's get Gutho's dogs on a truck, get them into the bubble, get them into the games, like they can be sitting there and everyone, we were having trouble filling the stands. Not as many people go to the games. There's Gutho's two dogs sitting
Stop it.
What's wrong with that?
Give him one.
Don't
I think
be doggest, NRL.
Triple M, big
Don't
breakfast.
Be doggest. Tokyo Olympics, the abbreviated opening ceremony on Friday, but the sports actually softball and soccer start tomorrow because they've got to get the tournaments all over and done with. All the athletes are there, all the reporters seem to be, including this guy, Mark Barretta, live from Tokyo. How are you, mate? Barretta.
Hey, guys, good as gold, thanks. Konnichiwa from Tokyo.
Now, process, hard to get in there. Let's go from the time you got off the plane, I guess.
Unbelievably, but understandably difficult. We had COVID tests every day before we left, so the last 3 days, and you have an appointment with the doctor. You go to the airport. As soon as you get off the plane in Tokyo, you are saliva tested. You sit and wait in the airport until that test comes back as a negative, and then you can move through immigration. Then every day since we've arrived, we've been tested. The saliva test is a little bit quicker, and you have to check in everywhere you go, your temperature check. So even getting to this to our sunrise location in the morning, there's generally two or three temperature checks along the way just to make sure that you are well, you don't have a fever. But they are working hard, the Japanese, to make this safe. But for everyone who comes there, there are 11,000 athletes on their way from around the world and 11,000 members of the media here. So it's a big event. And then you've got all the officials and obviously the sad thing at the moment, no spectators.
Mm, Brett, it hasn't come without its drama, obviously, the Olympics in Tokyo with Japan having an outbreak of COVID and people saying it's not safe, it shouldn't be going ahead. They have limited the spectators, obviously, and some major sponsors, Toyota, have just recently pulled out their sponsorship in the bid. It doesn't come without its drama. What can you tell us? How are Olympians responding to the excitement of what for them seems a long time coming?
This will sound really surreal, but they're almost immune to it in that here there's no talk of that, probably because I guess we're in what is the Olympic bubble. And you've got to remember, we for 14 days here, we can't have any outside contact. So we move to the venues, all under control. We go back to our hotels, and we can only move either within the hotel or within the Olympic venues, and that's it. And the athletes are the same, and that's your first 14 days. Remember, not many of the athletes will be here much longer than a few days or a week or a couple of weeks, depending on their sport.
Just on that point, Barrett.
You fly in late, and then you've got to get out.
They compete, and they don't hang around drinking and using condoms, etc. They'll be competing and going straight away. Is that a way of playing it?
That's the deal. Yeah, you've basically got 48 hours to be out the door. Most will be out within 24 hours. Most likely, most will be out within a few hours. So they're sort of, in many ways, they're losing a lot of what is the traditional Olympic experience and the traditional village experience. But you know, it's different. That's how it's got to be to get this done. But all the athletes are just excited to be here and have the chance to compete. 100%. That is the feeling amongst the team. You know, everyone, they just want this opportunity because for some athletes, this is once in a lifetime. This will only happen once, and you either go to Olympics, you're an Olympian, or you're not.
I'm sure they were excited to be over there, but were they excited about the prospect of sleeping in a cardboard bed to deter any sort of amorous Olympians getting it on?
These beds are ripper. So allegedly the design is to stop, if you put more than one person in the bed, it collapses, is the theory.
Yes.
An Irish gymnast has done a what we call a technical jumping test on it overnight.
He did the Irish jig.
Oh, really?
Up and down on the bed. Yeah, I mean, who else is going to do this? So he's been jumping up and down on the bed.
Did it survive?
You can actually jump up and down. It survived. So it's game on in the village. Everything's back to normal.
Oh, and there's plenty of condoms, etc. Hey, Bruce, can I just check? You know how you guys can't go into the village normally, but the athletes will come out to be interviewed and stuff. That's not on either.
That's a no. And inside the village, normally you can get into the village. There's a shared zone, if you like, when you first go in. Like, you can imagine a giant courtyard where if we go into the village to do interviews, we can go in that part. And then beyond that is where the athletes sleep, and you can't get in there. But it's an absolute no. The distance to athletes, very strict masks and 2 meter distance to all athletes. They're doing everything they can to protect the athletes and protect the people of Japan as well. And it's interesting here, there's a lot of talk about how bad the situation in Japan is, but it's really not on the surface. You know, in Japan, I'm just looking down at the road below us, and, you know, they're sort of getting on with life as is. There are people, everyone's got a mask, but that's about it.
Mate, sounds awesome. Another 3 days till the opening ceremony. You'll be there the whole time, live and free on Channel 7, the Olympics. We might catch up with you as we go along, mate. Thanks for this morning.
I'd love to, guys. I'm here for you. And it's a great privilege, an awesome event. And it's going to be to watch at home. It'll be a spectacular game.
Mark Barretta, thanks, mate. The Big Breakfast,
Triple M. I was presented with an interesting theory around kids and swearing over the school holidays, Marto, mixing with lots of different families and lots of different kids.
Oh, different standards.
Yeah, there was probably a period of a week where River kept dobbing on...
Five-year-old,
yep. Youngest Cutie. Daughter, who's a stickler for the rules, and she continued to dob on one poor child in particular over our stay at Moreton Island because... Yeah. The theory in their household is, because, you know, different rules for different places.
That's right.
The theory in their household is that the mother takes is that my kids are going to swear behind my back when I'm not listening. Yep. All kids do it, you know, whether it's the SH word or the F word or whatever it might be. At some stage, it's going to fall out of their mouth, right? So instead of adopting the principle of don't swear, you're not allowed to swear and you'll get in trouble, she adopts the principle of if you're going to swear, make sure it's not in front of girls, it's not in front of adults, and it's not in front of someone who's going to dob on you.
Oh, she picked the wrong target with your five-year-old.
He picked the wrong target with my five-year-old because not only is she a girl, she is also a dobber. She's the youngest of four, and it's her way of survival. She just dobs on everybody or whinges enough that they eventually give up or back out and she gets her way.
She's got a bit of NRL referee in her.
She does. And so this poor little boy kept getting dobbed on for something that he thought was okay because his mum told him. Whereas in our house, it's an adult thing. Swearing, I don't say you can't do it. I just say when you're an adult, you can do whatever you want. But now the kids are like, you swear. And I'm like, exactly. I'm an adult. Don't do as I say. Do as I do. I'm your parent. Don't do it. I don't.
Have you ever heard your kids swear yet?
Well, this is the thing I want to get to because I actually overheard River swear because she was in present company and she thought that it was okay because he's allowed to swear, I'm allowed to swear. And I had
when in Rome theory.
And I had never personally heard her swear myself. The kids have told me, River said, you know, D-head. And I'm like, just ignore her. She's five. Don't bring attention to it because if we make it a thing, she'll think it's funny and she'll continue to do it.
Yes.
But I overheard her say the F word. And
Dave, I just check with the beeping? She just said F. She didn't say.
Just in case.
Just in case Dave knows me, he can fall out. But it was funny. And I don't know of any other parent when they heard their child swear for the first time, how they reacted.
Proud.
But, well, I think the thing is she used it in context.
Oh, what?
And the situation almost in her defense deserved an F-bomb.
Did she kick her shin on a tow bar?
She did it. Someone said something. Someone did something to her, and she called them an F-head.
Okay,
a five-year-old.
Yeah, beat that one, don't.
Yeah, and I was obviously disappointed, but a little bit proud because I was like, "Yeah, he deserved that." And he was a little bit of an F-head, but you know, it's hard.
You're getting slower,
but it was funny. I thought it was hilarious, and I had to relay the story to the parent of the boy that she called an F-head, and I had to tell Corey, and he's like, "That's not funny." It's not like I'm like, "Well, it's a little bit funny," you know, because I remember the first time Memphis swore, she was like three. She was even. Younger, and she couldn't get something into her backpack, and she was trying to zip it up, but the teddy kept getting the fur of the teddy that she had stuffed into the backpack got stuck in the zip, and she's like, "Oh, for F's sake!"
Oh, that is wordy.
And I was like, she used it in context, and it was appropriate. And I was,
she would have seen you do that to your handbag and say exactly
harmless,
the same thing.
You know, like it's situational. It's not like she's going around calling kids at the skate park F's and C, whatever. 1-3-3-5-3.
What do you want?
The first time you heard your kids swear, tell us. Parents, don't be ashamed. It's okay. They all do it, and it's funny.
What about
tell us.
Like the goat? Remember the, see that thing on their face?
It's an effing goat.
It's an effing goat.
There's this viral TikTok video.
It's a goat.
Marta, I'm proud of you. Social media reference. Look at you go. Kristen, good morning from the sunny coast.
Oh, good morning, guys. It wasn't my child. It was my grandson, my beautiful 2-year-old grandson was about 13 months old with the first F-bomb. That was in context.
That would have been like a first word, video. Kristen.
Yes, almost first word. He was quite vocabulary. His literacy was quite good.
That's advanced.
But his mother was pregnant, and she, every time she stubbed a toe or had to bend over, she dropped the F-bomb.
Well, you
because
don't,
it's hard work when you're fully pregnant.
You don't realise, Kristen, they're little sponges, aren't they? And everything
they
we say and do, they mimic,
for signals.
They mimic and copy.
So
that's why they call it.
The very first one was a stub of the toe caught on video, naked out of the sandpit, stubbed his toe and effed. Loud and clear.
Was it
and
F
his mother, yes, and the mother giggled and she said, "What did you say?" And he turned around with a grin and just laughed. Like, you know exactly what I said.
That's, I think that sometimes time, the context of it too, though, Kristen, is that he was naked coming out of the sandpit at 13 months old saying the F word. Like, just the situation in itself is hilarious.
Now, did you put
it
that up?
It is hilarious with, you know, the bottom showing as he bent over with a grin.
I mean,
funny.
Kristen, did you put it up anywhere?
It's on video. No, we couldn't go live because the second time was on the reveal of his baby brother. And it was a big secret. No grandparents allowed in the room.
Yeah.
The baby brothers arrive and the little 18-month-old gets on GoPro, comes in, the big announcement, your baby brother's here. It's fantastic. Come up to the bed. Mum's had a seizure. She's got stitches. Okay. Baby climbs on board, leans back and drops the F-bomb in absolute shock that there's a live baby there.
He was disappointed he got a brother. He's like, I wanted a bloody sister.
Sister. Wanted a truck.
D from Yarrabilba, 133353. The first time you heard your kids swear, was it funny?
Well, it wasn't actually me that heard them. Unfortunately, my little preppy, who's five, got in trouble at school and called the principal or deputy principal some choice words.
Oh,
Why?
I don't know. He felt like it. He was... he called the deputy principal a BS and a poo-poo head.
That's rugged.
Didn't quite get it quite right. Now we have some rules at home.
Sometimes principals can be poo-poo heads. Well deserved.
How much trouble did he get in, D?
He might have got suspended for a week.
That's a reward when you're five.
I know. And then the school holidays came, so he had like a 5-week holiday. Oh, it was great.
Too good.
Hey, D, great call. We're going to give you a double pass to go see Ross Noble at the Brisbane Comedy Festival 2021. It's on now. Book now at brisbanecomedyfestival.com.
We might have to bring this back, Marto. Jason from Crestmead, his grandson dropped his first F-bomb and he's not even four. What about this one? Son isn't even two yet and is dropping F-bombs. I know it's not funny, but it is just a word.
Let's
and when they're little, it's innocent.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 5:30.
104.5 Triple M.
The man who knows everything for the man, EFTM.com. Hey, Trev, the reason I'm ringing you, I want to talk about ransomware because crime isn't just a physical one these days. Cybercrime, they reckon it's costing America $26 billion a year. Here in Australia, it's $1.4 billion per year. This is when you get a message from these cyber criminals, Margo. They'll send you a note that says, hey, listen, here's an example. All of your files are currently encrypted. They're the first few words they send. Hey, as you know, or if you don't, Google it, all of the data that has been encrypted by your software cannot be recovered by any means without contacting our team. And then they say, pay us $1.5 million and you can have your data back.
I don't know anything about that. I just get the ones that say a Nigerian businessman or prince wants to marry me and send me some money.
See, that's just you. They're having a go. Whereas, Trev, can you explain this this cyber security and cyber crime to everyone and the way it's in just blowing out of the world in the last year?
So this is like a legit modern virus. So back, 10, 15 years ago, you got a virus, your computer would play up, you'd get error messages, pop-ups, whatever, and you'd have to run antivirus and you'd fix it. But these days, what they do is they infect your computer and they actually lock your files. So let's say you open up your computer and you go to your My Documents folders to look at some documents or photos, and they're all not there or they're kind of unopenable. And it's because they're encrypted. And when you try to open them, you get that message that says, no, we own your files now and you've got to pay us. Now, at a big business, it might be millions of dollars. But if you, as an individual, got a ransomware attack, it might be just a few hundred dollars, they ask. It might be $1,000.
Oh, so they're doing it to individuals, not just to these big corporations.
This could happen to your computer at home. This could happen to the biggest businesses in the world. This is the modern kind of virus. This is the modern way of getting cash out of people without having to hold a gun to their head.
We're so data entry happy, aren't we? We're just happy to put our credit card details or our billing address details into any old website that we're buying from online. Is that how they're accessing us, Trevor? How do we protect ourselves from being a target?
You know, you spot on, Margo. The number one way they do this is password violation. So basically, let's say you've used 10 different shopping sites this month. And, when they ask you to check out, do you want to create a guest account or log in? And you just put in that everyday password you use everywhere else. And that let's say that shop gets hacked at some point, just unfortunate business. They download all the customer information. They don't have your credit card. They don't have your date of birth. They've just got your email address and your password. And so that's what they use to then attack you in other ways or breach your computer. And that's why... password protection is as big a problem as ransomware.
So, Trev, this isn't pimply kids in the basement of their parents' house. This is organised criminal gangs, isn't it?
Yeah. This is Russian organised crime. This is, Middle Eastern. This is everywhere. This is organised crime. There would be Australian organised crime organisations that are infiltrating Aussie businesses and global businesses with ransomware. It's just a new form of crime.
Would it be safe to say, Trev, that changing up your password obviously is a safe idea? I mean, I know, you know, there's a generation of my parents, our parents, who have the same password for everything. Yep. Their key card has the same PIN number as their security card, as their email address, and they've written it down on a post-it note somewhere, you know? Yeah. I know that, you know, I've got an iPhone, and when I log in or create an account, it says, do you want us to generate a secure password for you? And then they store it in your phone. Is that just as dangerous, or is that a better way of doing things?
No, it's a great way of doing things. The problem is those passwords are all impossible to remember. And when you want to use that site or that service off your phone, you're like, what the heck's the password?
Yeah.
So you've forgotten it. Look, I will admit, and I have no problem with this. The best security people would hate this, but I have a password for my bank. I have a password for my email. But then I have a password for pretty much everything else because I'm like everyone. I can't remember it.
Yeah.
But what I do is I change it every 3 to 6 months. I change my password on Facebook, Twitter, all those regular shopping sites that I use. I change it. And that's what keeps me safe. Because if the hackers get that password I used a year ago, good luck, whatever, I don't use that anymore. So that, plus there's actual software you can have on your own computer and your phone. Trend Micro have a thing called ID Security. And what it does is it searches the criminal underworld for your email address and your password and lets you know if it's been compromised. So
Jeez.
There are things you can do. But the number one thing, don't pay the ransom. If
don't.
You get ransomware,
yeah.
If you get attacked, the stats are something like 54% of people will pay the ransom, but only 24% of them get their data back. So the numbers are against you.
And then they can go again and hit you the next week, the next month,
etc. They're just going to say, you pay the ransom. They say, sorry, we need more.
It almost condones
it. They're
going
to bleed you. So no.
Trev,
rely on your backups.
The reason we're talking to you, because we ran into this bloke yesterday from JBS. Now, they're an enormous cattle company, but they supply more protein to the humans around the world. They're a big Brazilian company, but they're everywhere. They make all the meat
all
and beans.
All your primo hams that you buy, your
beans,
bacon.
Everything. All right, so they're enormous. They got hacked. You probably have heard about this one in the States, but it affected all of Australia's supply chains of meat. They paid, he told us yesterday, $14 million in Bitcoin to get their data back.
Yes, and that's a massive risk. They would have spent days determining whether or not the risk was better to pay or not to pay. And the thing is, it depends as a business. That just shows, unfortunately for them, that they weren't, you know, in control of their entire computer systems to the point where they could just go big middle finger to the hackers and don't worry, we'll just, you know, restore a backup kind of thing. I'm oversimplifying, but
no, that's what we want from you.
That's why big businesses have to spend more money on IT these days, because this is a genuine risk.
Trev, once again, you've been the idiot's guide to something very complex. Trev, along.
I thought that was going to go just to be the idiot there, but that's okay.
No, well, the main point for our idiots is change your passwords regularly and don't always rely on birth dates and kids' names and favourite colours.
Don't pay the ransom.
And if you want to know everything, EFTM.com. Thanks, Trev, along.
Cheers.
Triple M.
Mark, I remember that fire pit I showed you at Moreton Island at our place. And I said, that thing cost me $70. I bought it from a bloke at Salisbury.
So good. It kept us warm most nights over there for a week.
And all it was, everybody, was it's actually brilliant. I hope he doesn't mind me sharing it.
What is it, a tire rim?
Yeah, the rims
like
off
the steel
truck,
reel.
Off trucks are about 30 kilograms each. And he just put a couple of bolts in and some Rio welded together. It is simplistic brilliant.
Does the job.
Here he is now, the bloke who built it.
Oh,
his name's Stu, and it's a fire pit, and he calls it the Stew Pit. Hi, Stu.
Morning. How are you?
Clever.
Oh, mate. Now, listen, we didn't ring you to talk about this because you told me, and I'm interested in this because it's one, it's suburbs of Brisbane are disappearing our character housing. I went to your house and picked it up, and you said, did you notice all the signs? And I did. Can you tell everyone what's potentially happening in your suburb of Salisbury?
Okay, right through from Maruka through Salisbury to Nathan, the council wants to change the zoning to allow 3 to 8 story units. So 8 story in Maruka, 5 story in parts of Salisbury, and 3 story in parts of Salisbury. Yeah.
Stu, why did you feel that you wanted to tackle this, and what have you done? Have you got a petition going? Have you got the neighbours on board? What's the deal?
Yeah, okay. So we've formed the Salisbury Community Action Group, and Maruka's done the same, the Maruka Action Group. And we've got a group of people together. I've started a Facebook page, which I've got over 200 members, which is SOS equals Save Our Salisbury. And
nice,
clever.
We're having meetings down the park every Sunday. We've let it drop the whole suburb twice.
Yeah,
and this has all been done just by a few people, but we've got a lot of people on board, and we're also looking out for the elderly. So we're doing extra steps to make sure that people without internet can sort of submit. So we've got submissions which are due on Monday.
What sort of response and support do you need to be able to get this through, Stu, to the government or the council to listen?
We need everyone in Brisbane basically to be aware that the suburbs are under threat. They don't want urban sprawl. So what they want to do is they just want to put units right through the suburb, but they're not putting more parks. They're putting them right around schools. So we need people when they see this coming to get their submissions in. So that's what it's now. That will form the further plan down the track. If we don't say what we want and what we don't want with it, then they'll just say, well, you said nothing. Let's go for it.
So. Yeah, we always talk about the big government screwing us and squishing us and everything else. We've given you an opportunity today, Stu. Hopefully somebody's listening and somebody says, yeah, I'm going to help this bloke out because it's the best for all of us.
SOS is the name of the Facebook page. SOS. Save Our Salisbury. Stu, thank you so much for your time this morning and all of the best.
Thanks, guys. You're awesome. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Mate.
Marto, this is really a thing. I know that this has happened in my suburb that we're living in. There was a development that was going ahead, which was going to be a big, like a religious building that was going to be put in the middle of Cornubia in suburbia. And then the neighbourhood petitioned against it and they won. And so development was originally going to happen, which was in 200 metres of a school, which was going to cause more congestion and more traffic. They then purchased an old nursery. A little bit further
so
down on a major road.
Happened or it's happening.
Yeah, it still happened, but it just moved to a site that was more appropriate. I know growing up in our suburb, in our street of Tanimera, my mum fought the Logan City Council, got a petition going against a substation in our street, in and around housing, because she didn't like the idea of, high
people power
levels of radiation. And
did
she
people
got
back
it across,
her up?
People backed her up.
So she did the work, then people come in behind, then
she
the government
the
says,
oh, and she won.
I love this. Righto, 133353. Show Stu that it's possible when you fought the law and you put up a bit of opposition and you actually won. I fought the law and the law didn't win. I did. 133353.
John from Mitchelton.
Hey, mate, how you going?
Yeah, what happened, mate?
Glen Retreat Road, Mitchelton, back in the 90s. Mano, you might know that, being a Mitchie boy.
Yeah, going up towards at the school, turn left at the school, going out, or before the school, yeah.
So we had back in the 90s, we had a V8 Holden Statesman, and we thought we'd be pretty cool young people and do a burnout.
Yeah, the Stato.
Hold on.
Oh, a burnout?
What's this got to do with burnout? Yeah, all right, so you did burnout.
So there was a cop car, three cars behind us, which we didn't see.
Yeah.
So pulled us over. Bloody 4 years we took it to court. We said that the oil in the gearbox slipped. And after 4 years, the judge said, mate, don't want to see you again. See you later.
Hold on. You got away with it.
Got away with it.
All right. Now, we weren't expecting a burnout.
I think the real question is, John, did you have the skid tyres on? I hope you didn't use good tyres.
No, well, we're only 18 with a whole V8.
In a statesman. John, magnificent. We were looking for something a little... Well, no, that's...
Well, he fought it and he won it.
He fought the law and won.
What about you, Desley from Indooroopilly, 133353? Did you fight the law and win?
Yeah, none on my own. Similar to Stu, our lovely little area, Indooroopilly Woods, had a development DA go in for 35 townhouses. We banded together, took it on, fundraised. One of the main things we were really upset about was a beautiful treed area, as Indooroopilly is. They and protected, as in, like, we'd built houses and weren't allowed to knock trees down, etc. But they were knocking down over 200 trees and were leaving five. And these were protected. And we're going, well, how can they be allowed to do it? So we took them on. We're very thankful, and I'd suggest to Stu to put it out there for any lovely, well-educated, retired people with lots of time on their hands.
Yes, that's a good one.
Involved because we were very lucky with being able to get some very, very good legal advice, architectural advice.
Well, Stu, I'm sure, is listening right now, Save Our Salisbury, but a retired town planner, a retired architect, things like that, or somebody who understands the public service and the way it works.
Absolutely. We got a lot of good advice. And this, you may remember the now defunct Blue Sky Corporation. And that's who we were taking on. So we were taking on some big hitters heavy out hitters. There. Yeah, and we did. We went along. We had our representatives go along to court, to meetings, to you name it. We did it. Obviously, we did have some legal costs, but our fundraising, we were very proud that we were able to bandy our local residents together. And we had a satisfactory win. And in fact, we didn't knock it on the head, but it went from 35 townhouses to 17, and we got left about 100 trees, which really made quite a difference. And it's under construction now, but, you know, it was a good win-win for everybody. And it
great
did pull the community
power.
Together.
People yeah, power. Absolutely. I love it. Well done, Desley. Great story. And
I know why they let her get away with it. Her word count is high. They couldn't get a word in, and she wore them down.
I give up, Desley. Stop talking.
Just have it. Whatever.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
2.5 weeks until the Eka 2021 is on, and we're opening the gates a whole day early for you, our listeners.
Yeah, the Eka starts on Saturday, the 7th of August. But, Marto, we're going to be broadcasting our show live from there the day before on the 6th, and we want you to beat the crowds. We want you to come along with us and get into the Eka a whole day early.
Yep, and every day we're taking a stroll down Sideshow Alley and playing a different carnival game. What game are we playing today, Dave?
We are playing a game called Carnioke.
What?
Carnioke.
Do I get an opportunity to sing?
I hope
no,
not.
No, we've recruited one of our favourite carnies to sing a classic you would hear on Triple M played often. You just need to tell us what song it is.
But first, you got to ring right now. 1-3-3-5. Was it 1-3-3-5-0-5-3? 1-3-3-5-3.
You've only been here 20 years.
Oh, see that little sheet of paper in front of you? It says it there. 1-3-3-5-3.
Call now if you want to be at the Eka.
Playing for keeps today is Jody from Arana Hills, but we've got a couple of people on hold there because if Jody falters and doesn't guess who what our Carnioke is singing,
let's talk to
they
her.
Get the prize.
Jody, hello.
Hello.
How many kids you got?
Three.
Oh, this will save you hundreds of dollars getting into the Eka before the first day. Have you ever spoken to a carny? You understand the way they talk and then sing?
Oh, I wouldn't say I understand them.
No,
fully,
but not many people could understand them, Jodie.
Yeah, we'll give it a go.
Generally missing some teeth.
Aye,
really social creatures. They just like to push the button.
Yellow card, Margot. We love carnies.
We deserve that because we got our special carny in to sing this song.
Well, shall we listen to the song? Let's see if you can understand it, Jody. Here it is.
Okay.
Yeah, so travel around the world from year to year. Each one found me aimless one, all year the worse for wear. I've been back to Southeast Asia, it's a sure ain't there.
Jody, you've got 5 seconds to tell us what song the carny's singing.
The key is to
pick
up some of the lyrics and see if you can relay it back to what the original song was.
Two.
Yes!
Oh, she got it!
Magnificent!
Oh, my God! Cool.
Jody from Arana Hills.
Where did you pluck that from? Somewhere deep in your mind.
I picked up Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Go back, and then I got it.
Well done, Jo.
Certainly was. Cold Chisels, K-san, which means you've won yourself a family pass to get into the Eka.
Friday, August
Thank
the 6th.
Thank you so much.
Get the kids out of school for that day, Jody. It'll be worth it. They'll learn more at the Eka than they will at educational facility.
Congratulations, Jody. Get your official Eka show guide at couriermail.com.au. The Courier Mail, where for Eka.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
Matt, I'd just like to remind you of a moment that we had together yesterday.
Very it was nice going
romantic
lunch together.
Lunch date.
It wasn't a romantic lunch date.
It was beautiful until you pulled out the old Marto card.
What? Ted, I'm not letting this go. I'll need another piece of paper.
Can't take him anywhere.
What, mate?
Alessandro from Fat Cow, do you approve?
I do.
It was a very esteemed lunch that we got to attend yesterday. It was the Macca's chef's shared table experience. We sat in the kitchen at the Royal International Convention Centre over there at South Bank.
Lovely.
And we
at the Ecker.
At the Ecker, at R&A Showgrounds. Yeah. And we got to sample some of the finest meats and dishes that are going
but
to be served.
But they gave us too much.
At the Ecker. And we had the head chef Simon from the Regatta. We had the head chef from the Norman. We had the head chef from Fat Cow. Some of Brisbane's best steak restaurants were in our presence. Yeah. And you thought it'd be a really great idea. They gave us some media sheets with some information on it.
That's great.
About what it is that we were going to be eating, who was going to be preparing the dishes for us.
But just to tell everybody, because they gave us little slices of meat. It was, I've never been to such a thing, a tasting of meat. It was great.
It was incredible.
It just had a bit of that one, and then it came again, and then some more.
We started off with a rack of lamb.
And then what? And then after having about five little tasty things, then they throw a bloody big steak, a big rib
the
fillet.
The Queenslander it was, the true Queenslander
rib,
steak.
I fillet or rib fillet? I think it was I fillet. With some potato and greens, and I had some of it, but I left probably something the size of half my fist.
Yeah, I was sitting beside you and Dobbo, and I was the only one of the three of us that finished said steak. It probably about a 300-gram steak, you reckon?
Yeah.
You had half left, and Dobbo had half left.
I don't like to eat too much at
lunchtime.
And
you don't like to waste things, it seems.
I look at that piece of meat, it had Ted, my dog, written all over it.
You went on to lift said steak off your plate onto your media release piece of A4 paper. Folded it up into a nice little package, and then you put it in your pocket.
That's right. So no one got to question me.
And then you looked at Dubbo and said, "What are you doing with that? Can I have yours too?"
His was too much. His was too heavy.
It's incredible.
You don't need two pieces of steak in your pocket.
And I thought, you are the tightest human being
there
is.
Should have seen Ted when I got home, though. Jeez, he was keen on my pocket.
I thought, it's Tuesday. We got to do this.
Tight ass.
Tight ass Tuesday.
Tight ass Tuesday. We haven't done it for a while.
All right.
But you, Marto, stealing two half steaks from a free lunch.
What? That's
the lunch was free. We didn't even pay for it, and you still took leftovers.
That wasn't tight stealing. Ass. That was just being.
But it wasn't even civilized leftovers. You didn't say, "Excuse me, could I please have a doggy bag or a takeaway bag? Could you put it in a little container for me so I can take it with me?"
Thrifty.
You literally wrapped it up in a piece of paper and shoved it in your top pocket of your flannelette shirt.
No. Recycling, I think that's cool, because a lot of people would have thrown that piece of paper in the bin. I just went, I think I need to use it as a doggy bag.
133353. Do you have a Marto in your life like I have? I had to witness. I was ashamed yesterday at the luncheon. Ashley from Fitzgibbon.
Hold on.
Do you have to deal with a tight ass like Marto in your life?
Well, I am Marto.
You're
the
tight
exactly
ass.
Same.
Loud and proud,
you
Ashley.
You can't walk away from that, can you, Ash?
I go to a steakhouse with the family. We go out for dinner. I've had surgery, so I don't eat a lot. And, yeah, I order like lamb cutlets or something like that. Whatever I've got left, wrapped up in the napkin. Take someone else's napkin, wrap theirs up, and I'll take it home to my dog.
Why don't you just not order as much food if you can't? If you, like, knowingly, I've had a few friends who have had a similar surgery, Ashley, where they can only eat small portions. They just order accordingly instead of ordering a big dirty steak and then taking it home.
But you don't always want the entree. You want the main meal. You want the different type of food. So you just, I get the lamb, usually lamb cutlets, and I go home, the dog won't leave me alone for 10 minutes before I give it to him.
But Margo was worried. Normally I have a toweling hat on during the day.
I'm
normally
glad
that's
he didn't,
where the
Ashley
bones go. But yesterday Ted
he normally
loves
folds
it
them up into his hat.
Can we just have a look at Bo from Cooper's Plain on the burner phone? My dad was so tight he refused to throw anything out of the fridge. Worst thing I saw him eat was 3-year-old yogurt. His reasoning for eating it, yogurt's
that's
off
dangerous
to start with. Surprisingly, he doesn't get sick.
I tight think ass.
Bo's dad has got it right.
Guts of steel. He's just been eating off yogurt his entire life. Ian from Bell Bowery, good
it's
morning.
Obviously good for your gut.
Yeah, good morning, Craig.
Hey,
yeah,
Ian.
Good, mate. Tight ass, we're talking about them. I've got Marto in my life and my husband.
While we got Ian on the phone, did you see that thing? You think you showed it to me. If you burn your pizzas, you get your grinder out with a fresh disc and you grind the burn off it. That guy was a genius.
It's
you saw
like,
that,
it's
didn't
the
you?
Equivalent of scraping the burnt bit off your toast with a knife, except this guy got out his sander.
A cordless grinder, Ian.
Ian, have you got a tight ass in your life, or are you a loud, proud tight ass like Ashley
I'm
and Marto?
I'm a loud, proud tight ass.
Okay,
my wife gives it to me because I rinse the deli meats that you buy. After a couple of days, they start to go slimy.
Yeah,
after a week, they they start to go more slimy, so I just rinse them off and towel dry them, and they're good for another week.
Pop them back in there, and no one knows anything better.
You know that they go slimy for a reason. It's because they're off, and then you shouldn't eat them. And that's what you give to your dog. You eat the good steak at the restaurant instead of taking it home to the dog. And you give your dog the leftover corned beef or ham that's a week old.
Who made you the expert?
Well, I'm just saying.
Ian and I know better.
It's common sense.
That was Triple M's Big Breakfast.
God, you do so much for this town. Triple M.